As the good man said, this is Resonance 104.4 FM in Central London and around the world, resonancefm.com. Technical difficulties with me, Tim Abbott. I have to, first of all, apologise for any of you that tuned in last week. I wasn't very well. I have bad days, and anxiety is a frequent visitor on those bad days. Because that's the cause of the absence, I decided it made sense to explore that in a bit more detail. So with me to cast some light on the subject is Catherine O'Neill, Programme Manager for Anxiety UK. Good afternoon, Catherine.
Hi, Tim.
How are you?
I'm not too bad. Are you feeling any better this week?
Yes, it's an interesting part of... We'll get into this in, obviously, more detail, but it just got to the point where I have a small time window to prepare this show, amongst other things, because Resonance is a volunteer-driven organisation, and so it came to the point where I just couldn't... It was feeding back on itself. I was getting stressed by the process of having to think about things, and it became harder and harder to actually think of anything.
Yeah.
And so, so that, dear listeners, is the reason that the show wasn't on last week, and... I'm by no means alone in having good and bad days with levels of anxiety, but how common is it, Catherine?
Anxiety is remarkably common, Tim. It's found in all walks of life, in all levels of the population. I was just speaking to a gentleman earlier on our helpline who said he came from a very privileged background, he had a good family and friends, and yet he was struck down by really disabling panic attacks and panic disorder. So it can really affect anyone. In terms of its prevalence rate, I mean, mental health, they think, affects a quarter of the population at any one time. And of that, I would say anxiety is probably around 10% of the people that do suffer. It is quite a significant proportion of people. We're talking millions here.
And is it... A question, it's hard to express this question, but I would say that the definition of anxiety is that you're worried about something that isn't necessarily justifiable.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the kind of criteria between, say, what we would say in inverted commas, a normal experience of anxiety, which everybody has from time to time, you know, whether you be waiting for your driving test or you're doing an exam or something like that, it's perfectly normal to feel anxious in those situations. Where an anxiety problem becomes a disorder is where your anxiety is out of proportion to the risks involved. If you might have a spider phobia, for example, and there's no chance of you ever being harmed by a spider, but your reaction is so severe that it's kind of out of proportion to the risks involved. Similarly, with something like a needle phobia, or if you're having a panic attack when you're on the tube, it's kind of that disproportionate anxiety that's how it's defined as a disorder rather than just an ordinary experience of anxiety.
So where does the experience of someone like myself, where it's life experience that's telling me that if I step outside my flat, the first thing I'm going to be is in extreme amounts of pain, and that's what triggers the anxiety, is that still... I mean, where does that sit, given that that it's not just illogical, it actually is partly based on life experience as well?
Yeah. So when you step out of your house, you do experience pain?
Yes, I have done, and a certain degree of experience tells me that I will do again.
Yeah, but I guess what we'd be trying to look at if I was doing some therapeutic work with you is trying to get you to look at, well, is the situation going to be as bad as you're anticipating? So are you catastrophizing it and thinking it's going to be unbearable, I'm not going to be able to deal with it, it's going to be really, really awful, and actually it's not going to be as bad as you think, perhaps? Or is it, you know, perhaps that it's not going to happen every time, and you start to think that it's going to happen every time because it's happened on a couple of occasions? Because a lot of times with anxiety, that you get the kind of catastrophizing and you get over generalizing, so you may have had a bad experience once or twice and you start to think, I'm always going to have that.
So let's just go into those modes again. You were talking about catastrophizing.
Yes,
so
it's predicting disaster. It's predicting doom.
So you've got a range of possible outcomes from a situation, and you jump to the worst possible scenario.
Yeah.
And the...
Sorry, go on.
No, carry on.
I was just going to say, a lot of the treatments for anxiety is helping you to look at things in a more balanced way. It's not saying to you, paint the world a rosy picture if it isn't, but it's saying, is the situation as bad as you think it's going to be, you know, really? Or are you kind of, as you say, looking at the most negative option that out of a range of options that's possibly available?
And I was... there's a set of health circumstances that I'm aware of and adjusted to.
Yeah.
That I was born with cerebral palsy, and therefore most of the peculiar muscular behaviours in my body I'm used to.
Yeah.
But adjusting and being aware of anxiety being an issue for me is a relatively new thing, and I wonder whether the extent to which it's part of the experience of disability that it wears you out and you end up with more fragile mental health and more susceptible to anxiety.
Yeah, I mean, in certain groups, you do find differing levels. For example, in the deaf community, there are quite high levels of anxiety, particularly for people who are profoundly deaf and don't speak, because they often have a lot of anxiety about getting lost or, you know, going out and not being able to communicate with people. People with physical disabilities, actually, I was told by somebody, actually seem to have better mental health, and I don't know what the reason for that is. But, you know, as we were discussing earlier off air, I think that anybody can experience anxiety. And the way I like to explain it to people on our helpline is, if you imagine your stress levels is like a glass of water. Now, anything can fill that glass up. It could be the school run, it could be the stresses and strains of daily life, it could be all kinds of reasons that fill that glass up. And unless you've got a way of emptying that glass out, eventually you get to a level where it's so full, it only takes a drop, like a very small incident. It could be just going about your normal day, but just a normal stressor tips you over the edge and into an anxiety state. And then what often happens is, once people get into that anxious state of mind, the way they cope with it actually causes it to self-perpetuate, keep it going, you know. So you might start to avoid certain situations or things, which makes it harder to go back into them. You might start thinking about things in a certain way, as we were saying, that magnifying negatives, minimizing positives, catastrophizing, or, you know, overgeneralizing kind of negative experiences. And once you're in that anxiety state, it's quite hard sometimes to break the cycle that's going on. And one of the things that we say to people is, you need to find a way to empty your glass of water. They use a leaky bucket analogy. So we need to put some holes in your bucket. And some of the ways you can do that is by looking after yourself. You know, is there any sort of, have you been doing relaxation? Have you looked at your diet? Are you communicating enough with your family and friends? Doing things that you enjoy, like going to gigs or, you know, whatever it is that works for you. It's trying to make sure that you've got your life balance right to try and negate the effect of these stresses on your life.
Two questions, really. Firstly, are there any general tips you can give to that end to manage it, to stop it getting to the level when that drop into the bucket causes an overflow?
Yeah. I mean, I'm somebody who's suffered with anxiety myself off and on for a number of years as well. So, and, you know, I see all these things. This is good practice. These are the things that you can do. I know in reality, like myself, I do all the great things when I'm feeling very anxious, almost when it's too late. And then as soon as you start to feel better, you kind of chuck everything out the window because life takes over, doesn't it? But some of the things that I've found very useful have been things like meditation can be really good. I've done some yoga. I used to just do it at home when I was very anxious. Things like exercise are really, really excellent ways of burning off that extra adrenaline that you might have. Talking to friends and family, and you know, just doing the things that you enjoy, whether that be getting out in the countryside, you know, having some fresh air. They all sound like kind of, you know, quite easy things to do, but we can easily forget about them in our sort of hectic modern lives. And if we don't make time for ourselves and see it as important as our physical health, then, you know, sometimes we're going to get into difficulties.
And is it more prevalent now, given that I think that the world moves at a faster pace?
Yeah. I mean, I think what we saw in the Office of National Statistics data, there was some data from 1993, and then the most recent one came out in 2007, which was released in 2009, and it showed that there was a 13% increase in people suffering from anxiety. Now, there's a lot of reasons why that could be. It could be that, you know, people are more able to report it now. It could be that there's greater awareness of it. But it could also be because we live in a very highly pressured, fast-paced environment now. We're constantly bombarded with fear information from the media. You know, we've got rolling news coverage of disaster events 24/7. People, you know, we've got being told by the newspapers that the world is a dangerous and unsafe place. And, you know, we're expected to cram more and more into our modern lives, whether that be work, especially for the ladies as well, if you've got children and working and things like that. I mean, there's a lot, as human beings, you've got to think our bodies evolved 10,000 years ago and our lifestyles were radically different then. You know, we were nomadic people and what the things, the sorts of stresses we encountered back then are radically different to now. But our body's still got the same physiological mechanisms that are designed to respond to, say, a saber-toothed tiger or, you know, a physical threat in that way.
Mm.
And now we've got missed mortgage payments, we've got job pressures, things like that. And, you know, it's triggering the same alarm in our body, but it's not the appropriate response, which is why we have all the physical symptoms of anxiety, like the heart rate, the adrenaline, and panic and things like that.
Now, we've touched on the mild end of the conditions and how to manage it before it gets unmanageable. What do you do if you're listening to this show and you know that you have moments when you completely lose control because of it?
Mm. I mean, it's very common. You know, we get calls all the time from people that are in extremely anxious states of mind, that are very, very worried and that have got to that stage, you know, and you know, believe me when I say that anxiety can really range from mild to very severe and disabling, where people can't go out the house. I've known people not go out the house for years, you know, because of this condition. So there is lots of things to do. I mean, the good thing is that anxiety is very treatable. There's lots of support out there. And as a first step, sometimes talking to somebody else that's been through similar difficulties really does help. That's why our helpline is manned by people with personal experience, and we're a user-led charity, which means we've all got personal experience of anxiety and depression as well. Because sometimes when you pick up that phone, you want the other person to take you seriously and to understand what you're talking about. So that's a good first step. Then you might want to look into cognitive behavioural therapy. Is the kind of, it's got the most evidence for its effectiveness. And what that therapy does is it's based in the present. It's not looking about where this has come from. It's looking at what are the things that you're doing and what are the things that you're thinking or the ways you're interpreting situations that might be contributing towards this anxiety continuing. Because anxiety can start for any number of reasons, whether it be stress at work, you know, physical health problems, you know, a bereavement. All of these things can trigger it. But usually what keeps it going in the longer term is the way that you're coping with it. And so cognitive behavioural therapy can give you a structured way to learn new ways to cope. Now, if somebody's sitting at home today and they want to instantly have a look at something, they can have a look on the Anxiety UK website. There's also an excellent website called livinglifetothefull.com. It's been put together by a psychiatrist up in Scotland. And it's got modules that you can take online that are based on cognitive behavioural therapy and that go into lots of different coping strategies that you can use, ways of thinking about yourself and different behaviours that you can undertake to try and stop that vicious circle of anxiety.
What is the phone number of the helpline?
Our helpline is 0844 775 774.
And your website is anxietyuk.org.uk?
That's right, yeah.
And I was on there earlier myself, it is it's a good source of information and linking to other things. As we were saying at the top of the show, the biggest thing I think about anxiety is the extent to which I was making a comparison with depression, actually, talking to someone before,
yeah.
and saying that the distinction between clinical depression and depression as in general sadness doesn't appear to exist with anxiety, in that anxiety that people everywhere feel is actually along the same lines as anxiety disorders. It's just some point on the same spectrum.
I guess the difference is I would say it's a fuzzy line, but I would say the line is, if you start to stop being able to do things in your life because of it, that is the sign that it's more serious. So, you know, anyone can live with a kind of low level of stress and anxiety, but if it doesn't affect your life, it doesn't matter, does it? We all know that there's like some, you know, and I get calls all the time from people saying, I've always been a bit of an anxious person, and I'm like it myself. But when it flips into a more disabling, and actually would be classed as an anxiety disorder or clinical anxiety, as you'd put it, is when it stops you being able to function in your life. So you're not able to work, it affects your relationships with other people. You can't live your life in the way that you would want to because of your anxiety. So, you know, I think that's the line, really, because you could have a phobia of anything, but if you never encountered it, it doesn't really matter, does it? It's when it starts to affect your life, that's when it becomes a problem.
I came across something before when I was preparing for this show that maybe it occurred to me in the back of my mind, that I spoke to somebody with Asperger's a while back. And during the course of the conversation I had with Sadie, we were discussing how overwhelming her life is in terms of the amount of sensitivity to things.
Yeah.
And I know that you guys have looked at the relationship between autism and anxiety as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's found a lot in people on the autistic spectrum. They do have experience of anxiety. I think what Sadie said about feeling, you know, completely overwhelmed by all the different bits of information and things that they've experienced. I mean, we're not experts in the relationship between autism and anxiety here at Anxiety UK. We do have a good partnership agreement with the National Autistic Society, who've done a lot of research into it, and we've got some of their information on our website that people can have a look at, and it's a good starting point for people. But yeah, it really is common, because, you know, it's very frustrating for people with autism, or to try and get themselves heard or to get the correct information off people. So you're not sure, they can have a look at that information on our website.
You said that to your research, as far as you were concerned, there was less of a comorbidity link between physical disability and anxiety than there was between other mental health disorders and anxiety.
Yeah.
So what are the... I guess if you're somebody who has another health problem, and you think that actually anxiety might be part of it, but you'd been... And I do this to a degree myself... You've been blaming it all on your primary condition.
Yeah.
What are the most common comorbidities, the most common overlapping conditions? I'm trying to stay away from the medical phraseology, but just to explain comorbidity for a second.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, go on.
Just that these are conditions that exist either simultaneously or triggering one off the other.
Yeah. They come together, sort of.
Mm.
I mean, the ones that I know, it's a lot of people who have, like, long-term conditions. Asthma is a big one, because obviously when your chest feels tight and you feel like you can't breathe, that can trigger a panic in some people, because it mimics some of the symptoms. People with heart disease, COPD, you know, chronic obstructive pulmonary disorder, where you're struggling to breathe. Again, that's really common. Diabetes is another one that you find very comorbid with depression and anxiety. So they're some of the ones that I've heard most about in terms of, like, the relationship between physical and anxiety.
And the health anxiety.
Yeah.
The, for want of a better word, hypochondria.
Yes.
So where does that line lie, and how do you deal with something when especially if your background is like mine is, that you are hyper vigilant to symptoms of things, because actually quite a lot of the time it might be serious.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a very difficult situation. We get lots and lots of calls from people with health anxiety, and we've done a lot of training recently for other helplines, health helplines like the Terence Higgins Trust, who work with HIV, Cancer Research UK, and a few of the bigger health charities, because they get lots of calls about it as well. And you know, I think the thing about health anxiety is there's a huge stigma to kind of being seen as a hypochondriac or being seen as a bit of a worrier, the worried well type thing, especially in health circles. But this is a real terrifying experience for people, because you know, if you thought that you were dying, then you would certainly want to make sure that you'd had all the investigations and things like that. It does become, the picture becomes complicated, where you do have physical health problems that you have to watch out for. And again, it's this proportionate response, basically. It's, you know, if there's a possibility that some of your symptoms could be something serious, it's, you know, what proportion is that? Is it likely to be that every time you experience like a heart palpitation or something like that, that it's going to be something serious? Or, you know, is it that you know, only in a tiny percent, is there only a tiny percent that it could be a heart problem? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it was, I mean, the best, just to illustrate where I come from in this particular set of circumstances, I had hydrocephalus. I have treatment for it, and I have all the piping that comes with it. And just to briefly explain, that basically means they drilled a hole in the side of my head and they artificially drain the fluid out of my skull into my stomach.
Yeah.
It does mean that I've got quite a lot of scar tissue on my head, and so I get quite a lot of headaches around the area where it is.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, that also is one of the early signs of a problem with the piping.
Yeah.
And so I end up in a situation where, I think I know the line with that particular condition.
Yeah.
But I can imagine there are some situations, and you make a good point about, you said asthma, but I can think of, you know, situations where if somebody's got angina chronically, then they're going to be, you know, if they eat too hot a curry, they're going to be panicking that they're, you know, that is
exactly
along those lines,
because it's just misinterpreting everything in line with their physical health condition, basically. I mean, the thing is, I wouldn't want to ever put anyone off seeking medical treatment if they are having physical symptoms. But with, I think the difference between health anxiety and just being a bit worried about your health is that somebody with health anxiety will go to the doctor because they're having a certain physical symptom, but then the doctor will say, you know, it's fine, and they won't believe the doctor, and they'll go and look stuff up on the internet, and they'll think, oh my goodness, it's actually something much more serious. The doctor missed something. Maybe he's made a mistake, so they'll go back to the doctor. You know, maybe a few times. Maybe they'll get referred to a specialist. You know, I've known people that have been convinced that they have a brain tumour and have been for a CAT scan, and, you know, everything's come back fine, and it's been all right for a week or two, and then after that time, it's been like, yeah, but what if they missed something? What if it was more? What if I'm in that tiny percentage of people that, you know, have problems with, their medical treatment and stuff? So I think, again, it's a difference between managing what's a normal anxiety and what is a risk, and, you know, what is disproportionate to the situation. If you're experiencing normal worries about, you know, a problem that you do have, then if you go and see the doctor and he says you're fine and you're like, okay, that's okay, then that's a proportionate response.
Well, that seems like a very good place to leave it. I think we need to go over the hotline number and the website address again.
Yeah. The helpline is 0844 775 774, and our website is www.anxietyuk.org.uk.
Thank you for joining us on Technical Difficulties.
Thanks a lot, Tim. Nice talking to you.
This is Technical Difficulties. I am Tim Abbott. Wear your scars with pride. And remember, we all have technical difficulties. Until next week, when we will be joined by Chris Powell of the London Organising Committee for the Paralympic Games. Goodbye. This is Baluji Srivastav, Waterfall.